number to give to WBAI.org online to show your support. As you know, we're going through some stuff. I'm being super duper simplistic about this. You know, it's a lot more complex than that, but we're going through some stuff. We need your help, and it would be nice if you can participate into our supporting our financial situation. All right, enough of that out of the way. 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Off the Hook coming up.
Due to the hurricane in the area you are calling, your call cannot be completed at this time. Please try your call later. 078P.
You have reached 99.5 WBAI is now off the hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes.
You can talk a little louder than that.
Yeah, I'm over here.
We've
How's it going?
We've got a brand new setup here, so we're testing it out for the first time.
It could be a rough road here.
In fact, for many people, we haven't been on the air for so long, this might be a brand new show. Yeah, our first edition of Off the Hook. We're starting here in 2023. Also, I should point out that Alex is joining us over in Skype land. Alex, are you there?
Fingers crossed.
I am indeed. Hello,
okay. Blue. Should I bring him up a little bit? He's a little low. Or are you going to do that?
I could do it, or you could do
it. Why don't you do it? That way I don't have to do anything.
All right, I'll try.
Yeah, I prefer that. Alex, you are in Skype land, but you also are in a physical location. What's your physical location?
I am. Much like you, I'm in a physical location as well. In time and space, I am in London.
It's like digital TV now. You have a virtual channel and you have an actual channel. And I can't really figure that out myself yet, but I will. But yeah, you actually are in London again. And that's pretty amazing. It's late. It's late where you are. Later.
It is, but it's not as late as it usually is in London because of our daylight savings time. You know, the clocks have not been set forward an hour here yet for British summertime. So it's only 11 p.m. here in London when it's usually 12 a.m.
And when do you start subscribing to the lunacy of daylight savings time over there?
I don't know. That's a good question. You'd have to ask somebody British about British summertime.
You're a lot closer to a British person than I am right now. So.
Yeah, maybe, maybe not.
Can't you just stick your head out the window and say, hey, boy, what day is it? And after he tells you what day it is, when does daylight savings time start? Maybe.
I probably could. I'm in a fairly busy road in Chelsea.
Okay.
And I probably, you know. Maybe I'll do this throughout the course of the show.
That looks like a Sharon Cross that is behind you. It kind of looks that
Charing Cross?
Yeah.
No, you know, it's
that
road, not.
But the building there. But is that a landscape, or are you actually outside?
No, I'm in the Chelsea Arts Club, actually.
I see.
I'm inside. Yeah.
Okay. Isn't that the place you're not allowed to use a phone?
That's correct. So, but if you're in a private room in the club, then you can use a phone. So I'm lodging here. So I have it's like my hotel room, so to speak. So I can use a phone here.
Are you sure?
You're not allowed to use a phone.
Are you sure you're allowed to use a phone in a private room there? There might be a rule.
they're very well made, but I think it's a-okay.
Okay.
But throughout the rest of the club, that is the one rule here, is that you're not allowed to use your phone. And readers of 2600 will be treated to some narrative about this place.
Well, don't give it away. Don't ruin the surprise.
I'm not ruining the whole thing. No, I think it's going to be an interesting column coming out. I liked it. I hope you did.
I'll reserve my comment until the issue comes out. I don't want to spoil it any more than you already have. Okay, so just for technical purposes here, because Kyle basically worked his ass off putting this new studio setup together. Are you able to hear okay over there in London, our voices?
Yeah, it's very loud, very clear.
Okay.
Not too loud. I'd say it's just right. You're in the Goldilocks zone.
Okay, good. Of course, the real test comes later when we go on YouTube at 8 o'clock. Because that's always where we have trouble for some reason. And if you want to join us on overtime, just go to our YouTube channel, Channel 2600, and you can call us and talk with us. And it'll be a whole lot of fun. Robin Gila out this week, but we'll be back next week. And we have all kinds of things to talk about. Oh, my goodness. Well, where do I start? There's a lot of... car news lately that I think we should just quickly go through, because there is a bunch of artificial intelligence subject matter that we have to get to. But this car business is really something that is bothering me on a number of different fronts. AM radio, yeah, our cousins on the other band, AM radio, they are under real threat, because more and more car makers are discontinuing putting AM radios in the cars that they build. Yeah. Now, this is also related to the industry going to electrification, you know, electric cars. Apparently, electric cars interfere, or the radio interferes with... You can't hear AM radio in electric cars, or many of them.
Some part of the engineering... noise and interference is inescapable. I guess it's from all of the motors spinning, creating sort of electromagnetic fields of sorts. I don't know. It's all related. Uh-huh. And when you have circuitry like that connected, getting a reception that is somewhat sensitive to that interference becomes nearly impossible.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a them problem. You know, it's like, okay, that it sounds like you're not ready for electric cars yet. If you can't figure out how to shield AM radios from the electric signals that the cars are putting off. You know, I had in one of my cars years ago, a shortwave radio. Believe it or not, I sure was able to get a shortwave radio. And I noticed with dismay that whenever I would turn on the headlights, I would get interference on the shortwave radio, which made the shortwave radio completely useless. Yeah, people said, "Oh, you have to go to a radio technician to fix that." And then someone else said, "No, you have to go to somebody who can figure out how to shield the headlights." Basically, it all turned into work for me. And no, that's not how it should work at all. It should be something that is ready for the consumers. AM radio is hugely important. Now, look, I don't listen to AM radio all that much. I listen to the Indian radio station, which is great. I'm not going to give the frequency out, but people can find it. Sometimes I listen to all news. Sometimes I listen to distant stations from different cities. There are all kinds of interesting things on there. There are a lot of things that I don't like on AM radio, like the hate speech. You know, a lot of right-wing talk radio is in fact, it's all right-wing talk radio. Proliferation of sports. But I know this is important to people, and it should continue to exist. And AM radio, there's something about the sound of AM radio. Not everybody gets this. Not everybody feels the same way. But if I hear music on AM radio, particularly classical music, there's something about that that you just can't duplicate anywhere else. There is just something so, I don't know, you're connected to the past somehow. Same thing with popular music. If you hear a Beatles song or something on AM, it has to sound crappy. And it just sounds better for some reason. I know that sounds crazy, but that's part of the magic of AM radio. It very much deserves to continue to exist, as does shortwave. I wish there was more going on shortwave these days, but right now we just have to try and save AM radio.
That feeling, you become transfixed as though you're in a really far, far away seat in an amphitheater or a very large performance space, except it's in the air. And I love that sensation that you're talking about. Two questions I had was just in response to this. I wonder if a lot of the programming on AM is now going to be looking for...
Yes.
You know, low power FM or FM writ large, middle of the dial, all that. I mean,
those side channels,
those interests, yeah. Becoming, nonprofits, thinking religious stations going, trying to crowding up certain parts of the spectrum and so forth. The other question I had is it seems to me, with all of the interesting things going on with electronics and miniaturization, how we have like small receivers and software-defined radios, there couldn't be some way to locate the antennas and sorts of things, or shield them like you're talking about. And I'm wondering, maybe cost is a part of this. They just don't want to spend. And there are
solutions to all the... If you can build an electric car, you can figure out a way to build an electric car where you can also have an AM radio.
Yeah, like if the receiver's like way up high and sort of away from certain things, or I don't know how that all works.
But get this, Ford has been, Ford is the company doing it, the latest company doing it. They were joined by BMW, Mazda, Polestar?
Yeah, that's like a new, they started with like a luxury competitor.
You know what, we're not going to talk about them because they're kicking AM radios out. We would talk about you if you weren't doing that, but we're not going to now. So go to hell, Polestar.
It's an accident.
Rivian.
An accident.
Never heard of Rivian either. Tesla, heard of them.
Same thing.
Volkswagen and Volvo. They all are saying that AM radio is incompatible with EVs, electric vehicles, citing electromagnetic interference from the powertrain. Yes, that is a word, the powertrain.
So that
sounds awesome and cool. So when I was 8, I would have really liked that. And Tesla made the same argument when it removed AM radios from its vehicles back in 2018. You might even say they're pioneers in getting rid of things. Electric vehicles are powered by a rechargeable battery, electric motor, and a frequency converter that controls how much power the car's electrical motors put out by turning voltage on and off thousands of times a second, basically chopping up energy. And this process causes electromagnetic interference that gets picked up by the radio. Well, I maintain radios are an essential part of a traveling vehicle, and they should not be eliminated simply because this new technology can't figure out how to not interfere. Alex, any thoughts?
On the other hand, if the technology of an AM radio is completely useless in these electronic vehicles, why persist with them?
Define completely useless. How is it useless?
If there's interference and the frequency is not audible, if you can't hear what people are saying on AM radio, or you can't hear the classical music you still nostalgically yearn for, then what's the point of having a piece of technology that doesn't work?
Let me just throw that back at you and say, if your steering wheel stops working, do you need that anymore? Come on.
Well, that's a bit different.
It's a little bit different, yes. Everything is going to be a little bit different.
Core component.
But my point is that in an emergency, and I've been in plenty of emergencies where I've been driving in a car and I need to listen to the radio, and AM radio is what is on and broadcasting to the local community, whether it's in a hurricane, in a blackout, in insurrections. Yes, I've been in a few of those. The AM radio has a wider range. It is able to reach a huge number of people. There's no reason. I mean, what if the same thing happens to FM radio? Would you say the same thing then? Or we feel better being on FM than people on AM?
Well, I'm taking a contrary point for the sake of it. Mm-hmm. But I think that the idea that you should have technology in a car essentially solely for nostalgia is silly.
I was bringing up the nostalgia. That's not the only reason. That's one of the attributes. But AM radio serves a very important... Why do you think the all-news stations are always on AM? You know?
I'm not disagreeing with that. That's a totally separate point.
You don't need high fidelity for certain bits of communication. And
I think our arguments are like ships passing in the night here. I agree with all those points. What I disagree with, though, is the fact that an AM radio still needs to be a critical component of a car if it doesn't work in that car because of this interference with electric vehicles.
Do you really believe in this day and age this is an impossible problem to solve?
Well, it may be an economically infeasible problem to solve.
Not to me, because I'm not going to buy an electric vehicle if I can't get an AM radio in it. And I mean that. I won't.
Well, you know, that's your choice, of course. But the other thing that you could do if you really want an AM radio is to just carry an AM radio with you.
If I could do that, hold on a second, Alex. If I could do that, then wouldn't that same interference affect that AM radio as well?
I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, that's something you should try. I mean, how far afield does this interference actually cause an AM radio to be dysfunctional?
Do you see, you're already figuring out how to solve the problem. If you just have to hold the AM radio in a different part of the car and you don't get interference, then you've solved the problem.
Maybe. Well, here's the other thing, you know, and this would go towards your point of including AM radios in cars. And I do believe that they do have a function, especially given the wider distance that AM radio covers as opposed to FM. But if it's the operation of the motor of an electric vehicle, this on and off voltage that was used in the motor that creates the interference, then one would think that an AM radio would still function in an electric vehicle if it was turned off, if it wasn't moving. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
saying turn the car off if you want to listen to the radio.
Yeah. Or if you're stationary.
Well, you know, that sounds absurd, but actually that is a good point because there are many times I've listened to the radio in a car that was not on. So, yeah, you could do that.
Right.
And why take away that? I mean, imagine, you know, you're on a mountaintop and your favorite song comes on and you hear it from a distant station. And we're not supposed to have those moments anymore because Tesla can't figure out how to make a car that doesn't interfere with AM radios.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I disagree with taking them out entirely, but if they are entirely dysfunctional, I disagree with keeping them in.
Yeah, it's disappointing that they're discussing its end and no longer implementing it in any way without a sort of future AM or trying to introduce something that will allow that capability to continue. That sort of legacy thing. Mm-hmm. We have more questions, it seems. Maybe someone can write in oth@2600.com. Tell us your opinion. Is it totally out of the question just because of the way the frequencies work? Can someone please explain what this like pulse, what kind of interference it creates? Are there other things that can be interfered with? Mm-hmm. Should we, what other concerns are actually being raised? Perhaps, is that something that you should consider when purchasing an electric vehicle? If you have some sort of medical device and other thing.
Look, AM radio has been around for 100 years. There has been all kinds of interference that it's dealt with in that period of time.
Is there another suitable frequency that potentially that could be, repurposed or
well, they're not going to move the AM band.
Complement it. Yeah, I mean, you have to work within the frequency range that's already allocated. So mm-hmm. There's no real way to get around that. And if it's just impossible because the field is so strong, I mean, typically there's like a powertrain. What they mean is like a motor in each wheel, like independently. It's not the same as like a central engine in
we've been to the moon. We sent rovers to Mars. We collided with an asteroid and knocked it off course. We can fix this. We can figure out how to make a car and not interfere with an AM radio. It's just a question of, do people think it's important enough? I think it is. I think AM radio is something that should be preserved and is quite useful, even though most of the stuff that's on it is, you know, things I don't listen to. But I don't think that should be the reason not to pursue something. Anyway, moving on. That was meant to be a 2-minute story there. Have you heard about this? This is also a very quick mention here. But Volkswagen has this service called CarNet. And there was this kid who was missing, basically in a stolen car. Okay, hold on a second. The kid didn't steal the car. The kid was in the car. The car got stolen. And they're searching for the stolen vehicle and an endangered child. And what do the sheriff's detectives do? They call Volkswagen CarNet to track down the vehicle. You know what they did? CarNet said, yeah, we can't do that unless you pay for the service. You got to pay to have the tracking device activated in Volkswagen CarNet. Yeah, see, CarNet lets owners track and control their vehicles remotely. According to a Chicago Sun-Times article, the CarNet trial period had ended, and a representative wanted $150 to restart the service and locate the SUV. The detective pleaded, explaining the extremely exigent circumstance, but the representative didn't budge, saying it was company policy. That representative is looking for employment. If anybody has the need for a firm and resolute person who does not back down, well, they're available now. Yeah, this is the kind of stupidity that you see when these services are subscription services. And you have, you know, people who are obstinate, who don't recognize when an emergency is. I mean,
it doesn't surprise me, though, entirely, because this is sort of like it's a embedded cellular receiver of sorts that has some kind of virtual SIM. So it's attached to some kind of carrier that the car manufacturer has like a bulk subscriber commitment to them. So there probably is some process to activate it if it was not being paid for. It seems like they do actually want to collect some money to initiate a new subscription via whatever third party they have sort of a business-to-business relationship with. I'm not defending it, and I don't know. I mean,
but how hard
only
is it?
Only for I only defend it, I guess, in the sense that it's sort of denying this sort of surveillance ability in some mm-hmm. respects. So there's that advantage I think we might consider more than most folks. But I don't know. What do you all think?
How hard is it to have just a status that every car company knows? You know, the equivalent of Amber Alert. And you get a call from a law enforcement agency saying, this is a situation now. Okay, that's an effect. We press the button and the service suddenly works without getting paid. You know, you get the free service if your kid gets abducted. Okay, it's a little bit of a consolation. I don't see how that's hard. I don't see why that isn't something that already isn't installed.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you have like a family mode or something that you can activate that for that is where it's a default, or you opt out of it and it's a default. And
the police, it's an emergency. They say this is the case, and the car manufacturer has the ability to override that.
Indeed, yeah, I was gonna say, much like the old cell phones from the 3G networks would still be able to dial 911 if there was no SIM, or it wasn't, you know,
yeah, kinda
it wasn't
like that.
Attached to a subscription. So it is certainly possible. It was on those.
Can you imagine that? You can't call 911 because you didn't pay your phone bill. Yeah, yeah. That's the same mentality.
That's less. Sorry.
Alex, go ahead.
I mean, that's a little bit different in that sense. 911, I think, because it's an emergency service. This is an exigent circumstance that law enforcement would be utilizing to engage in, I think, what Kyle correctly characterized as a surveillance technology. So, you know, I think we have to be careful about espousing some kind of law enforcement end run around our privacy rights here, even though this was a pretty egregious situation.
But hang on, Alex. Wouldn't you say the parents of the child had initiated that action? It's not the police doing it independently.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, the facts of what you read to me didn't indicate anything about, you know, the parents consenting to this or trying themselves with Volkswagen. I mean, I do think it's dangerous to give law enforcement some kind of power to turn on surveillance technology in a car when they believe it's an exigent circumstance.
But they're not turning it on. The car manufacturer is. They're using some kind of authorization from the police because the parents of the missing child have asked them to do that. Now, if they said, don't do that, I'm sure that would be in the story. Obviously, they shouldn't do it in that particular case.
In this particular case, I think it's, you know, look, it seems like it's warranted. However, I would prefer that the police go and get a warrant. I would prefer that they go to a judge and a judge says, yes, this is an exigent circumstance that justifies you getting this information from Volkswagen. And look, and you can do that within half an hour, an hour. You know, it doesn't take that long.
Yeah, but have you ever been in a carjacker's car for an hour? The time really crawls. I think this might be something where we're starting to act like that representative who is stonewalling the people who...
I don't think so. Right. I don't think so. I think we have to have clear barriers between what kind of data law enforcement can access about the whereabouts of our vehicles. Or they could begin, you know, giving some kind of pretextual justification that looks like an exigent circumstance that would allow them to access that data when they shouldn't be accessing it.
But why?
You know, this is the slippery slope.
I don't understand why you're introducing warrants into this, because obviously somebody called the cops, said, my kid is missing, please find my kid. Why would you need to go to a judge after that? The cops should say, yeah, okay, you've given us permission. We will contact the car manufacturer, get the service turned on, and find out where your kid is.
So if this set of parents said, I think my kid is in Emmanuel Goldstein's house, would the police then be allowed to enter your house?
It's not.
My house is not a car. Okay, this is a car. It's a moving vehicle. That's what we're talking about.
It's not the parents' property either.
Yeah, it's their car.
It's different. It's different because it's we're talking about mobility.
I agree that it's different. That it's their car. That's a big distinction. I totally agree with that because if they consented to law enforcement accessing this data, then sure, right? Then there's a consent issue. But I don't agree with giving law enforcement some kind of back-end route to this particular data whenever there's an exigent circumstance.
But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about this particular situation where there's, you know, a kid missing, being carjacked, and the parents obviously are very concerned about this, and they contact the law enforcement people, and, you know, having some representative say, yeah, you got to pay us before you do that, I think that is a real problem.
Oh, it's totally ridiculous. I mean, in many levels. On the other hand, from the perspective of the customer service representative, thinking about it from, you know, a different angle entirely, this guy probably works for some contractor, not necessarily even for Volkswagen, who probably has very little authority to do anything in his discretion.
Yeah,
he's just going to be completely on the rails.
Yeah, they have like a narrow management objective as far as fielding calls. It's an unusual call. However dire the circumstance, I'm with you. I think the privacy aspects and just writ large, like this is about consumer expectations. I think for these types of vehicles, there's probably a very quick way to figure out, okay, what make, model, what year, what are the capabilities of it? And as customers and owners of this vehicle, they maybe had an expectation that we know it can be found. It has this ability to use this. We use the trial period up. Whatever the case, they have a sort of an expectation now. But overall, with, you know, transportation vehicles in general, the you know, if that's not a capability of the car, that's something that the consumer knows. They know that this car doesn't have electronics and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's
so
another factor.
You should be aware what the capabilities are of your vehicle, and that's part of the what the customer agrees to when they're purchasing and you know, subscribing to these kinds of services.
Except they let their subscription lapse, and then their kid got abducted.
It's interesting to me, the reverse. Some of these, this is paralleling some of the stories I've heard. I don't know if you all have these vehicle like leases and things that people stop making payments on them, and the manufacturers now are able to disable the vehicles. Do we have a story on that?
We have a story, actually.
Okay.
This is our final car story. This has to do with cars that repossess themselves. I'm not kidding. This is something that is actually coming out. They're basically, there'll be several warnings from the vehicle before the system initiates a formal repossession. If these warnings are ignored, the car would begin to lose functionality ahead of a repo. The first lost functions would be minor inconveniences like cruise control, automated window controls. That's trying to torture you. Automated seat controls and some components of the infotainment system, such as AM radio. No, actually all radio. Global positioning system, MP3 player, etc. The next level is more serious and includes the loss of things like the air conditioning system, a remote key fob, and an automated door lock unlock system.
Wait, they're going to try to cook you in there?
Basically making you not want your car anymore because it's not working.
That could endanger.
It could, absolutely. Yeah, then they cut the brakes and maybe you'll pay now. I'm kidding about the brakes, but maybe not in the future. Likewise, an incessant and unpleasant sound may be turned on every time the owner is present in the vehicle. Only when the owner is present. When other people are present, that sound won't be there. But when that person is there, yeah, they'll play the sound. So if all of that gets endured by the car's owner and payment still has not been received, they could get locked out of the car. The patent application, this is what this is, a patent application, states that the repossession system computer may disable the door lock mechanism, thereby placing the vehicle in a lockout condition and preventing a person from entering a cabin of the vehicle. Now, there are several caveats that go with this, such as locking out the owner only on weekends or allowing for vehicle use in emergency situations. Indeed, the patent explicitly notes that if somebody is suffering from something like a heart attack, it uses the heart attack situation several times in the document, then the car could be unlocked. How does it know you're having a heart attack? I guess you have to swear you're having a heart attack. It says the vehicle's onboard camera could be used alongside a neural network to determine if an emergency situation is legitimate.
Who let the neural network in here?
We're worried about the cops, but the car manufacturers are watching all the time. Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's creepy.
This has been infotainment just on steroids, you know, chips and chips and more chips, all chips, no dip. It's there. It's in this stuff now.
It gets better. It gets better, Kyle. In some cases, the vehicle can be a semi-autonomous vehicle, and the repossession system computer may cooperate with the vehicle computer in the semi-autonomous vehicle to autonomously move the vehicle from a first spot to a second spot that is more convenient for a tow truck to tow the vehicle. The first spot, for example, may be located inside the property line of the owner, like a garage or a driveway. The second spot may be outside the property line, like a public road. Not sure how they're going to open up the garage door, but I'm sure they have a plan for that as well. In some other cases, the vehicle can be an autonomous vehicle, and the repossession system computer may cooperate with the vehicle computer to autonomously move the vehicle from the premises of the owner to a location like the premises of the repossession agency. And they can also, if the car is not worth very much, just have it go to a junkyard. They'll do that. They'll have your car drive itself to a junkyard because you didn't pay and have it destroyed right in front of your eyes. So, yeah, that's what Ford is applying for. This is another Ford thing. They're applying for that patent to self-repossess cars and drive themselves away, and that'll be the end of it.
Does it check to make sure you're not in it when it goes to the junkyard?
If that kid isn't in it, yeah. I mean, that's certainly all kinds of bad things can happen here.
Messed up. Mm-hmm. Really messed up.
Very messed up. Alex, are you still there? I don't see your face anymore.
I think he is.
He is. Okay, good. Because I want you to hear this story. This is something that really kind of annoyed me. Has to do with ChatGPT, as you might know. And basically, Elon Musk has been criticizing ChatGPT for being too woke. Yeah, that's the word that the right wing is constantly using for everything they don't like. Now, artificial intelligence is too woke. And the reason that he concluded that ChatGPT is too woke is because it wouldn't create a poem that said nice things about Donald Trump. That is the acid test. Wouldn't do it. It did it for Biden, but but it wouldn't do it for Trump. And that that is basically being used by the right wing as evidence that artificial intelligence is woke. Now, Elon Musk is an OpenAI co-founder who has since severed ties with the company. He's routinely criticized them for implementing safeguards that prevent the chatbot from producing responses that could be deemed offensive. Now, the president, OpenAI's current president, actually is taking responsibility for this, saying, "We made a mistake. The system we implemented did not reflect the values we intended to be in there. And I think we were not fast enough to address that. And I think that's a legitimate criticism of us." Really? That's a legitimate criticism? Not coming up with a poem to extol the virtues of Donald Trump? I mean, where do you draw the line? Let's have a little limerick about the Klan, you know? How is there any kind of a line that we don't cross?
Let's not.
No, let's not do that. I mean, yeah, there are people there that like this guy. I know that. But I don't know. I mean, I have my feelings about the person, about what the person has done. And I am struggling to find anything good to say. And I worry if we have this bit of technology that is able to generate all kinds of praise for somebody who is almost universally, except for a bunch of people in this country, seen as a negative force, where does that stop? Where is the line if the line is not there? Alex, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think I have a couple of thoughts on this. I think that in a sense, an AI can only be expected to generate responses with respect to the data on which it was trained. And so if it was not trained on, or rather, if there is no data in existence about the positive things that Donald Trump has done, then you can't expect it to just generate falsehoods and fabricate things, right? I mean, I also think one possible explanation is that when you define, you know, what is a positive thing or a positive benefit, as the AI would understand those words, it might actually be difficult for it to conjure up examples of good things that Donald Trump has done, perhaps, given the data on which it is trained. However, and I don't want this conversation to be a referendum on whether or not Trump did anything good in his presidency, but I think there is one very clear thing that he did in his presidency that I think we can all agree on was a tremendous success.
Okay, hold on. Everybody quiet. Everybody, I want to hear this. Go ahead.
Operation Warp Speed. And ironically, you know, it is the very thing that the conservatives absolutely hate. I think Trump did a fantastic job as president of the United States in getting the federal government to work with pharmaceutical companies to develop a vaccine for COVID. You got to admit, that was an initiative under him as president that actually worked out for the benefit not only of the United States, but I think of the entire planet. And it is ironically the one thing that bizarrely the conservatives should be taking credit for, but yet they've latched onto nonsensical, idiotic conspiracy theories about.
Now, is this something that he takes credit for as well, or is he trying to somehow distance himself from that?
I don't know, but I mean, he should be taking credit for it because it was a massive success under his administration.
Well, you know, again, any administration, just because something happens under it doesn't mean it's your fault or that you're the one that thought of it. But it is possible. It is possible that he came up with a good idea and that might have been it. I don't know if you can write a poem based on that one thing. But, you know, there are probably a couple of other things. I mean, I'm struggling in my head to think of something good to say about it. I'm thinking, okay, what I got is that, well, he grew up in Queens. And no, I mean, that's something that's good. You know, if you grow up in Queens, that's legit. But I can't get past that. You know, that's the thing. Grew up in Queens. Grew up very close to where I grew up, too, by the way, within a mile. I was six, but still.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm coming up empty. But I mean, if you want to write something about Mussolini, for instance, I'm not going to say Hitler. I'm just going to say Mussolini or Idi Amin, you know, one of the milder dictators. Well, no, he wasn't a mild dictator. But, you know, at some point, you're going to find a bunch of people who like somebody who is truly evil And is artificial intelligence going to help them, you know, build up the person more? And should we object if it doesn't do that? Obviously, there are going to be a set of values that any artificial intelligence creation is going to have. You know, it's going to believe in science. It's going to believe in facts. And right away, those two things are components that have become the enemy. You know, science, facts. No, we're going to make our own science, our own facts. So, yeah, I guess you could make artificial intelligence that doesn't play by those rules, but is that useful to anybody?
I don't know. I mean, I do tend to think that there should be maybe a bit more balance, or maybe creativity, or perhaps fewer parameters on the basis of certain content. You know, putting guardrails around, I think subjective, very getting purely subjective values about, you know, let's say, you know, the worth of a president, or political values and ideals. This may be not a great thing to have built into the data sets of an artificial intelligence. But I think it's a very tricky issue. I'm not entirely on one side of this or another at the moment. I think
it's tough. It's tough to figure out exactly where the right place to land is. But I do see the danger in just, you know, basically having this tool that can make anybody look good. You know, right. At some point you have to say, well, this person really isn't that good, and, you know, take the risk of somebody disagreeing with you. But I don't know. It could go very badly if we don't think this through.
Yeah, I think.
I
just want to add, it depends on how we're using it.
Mm-hmm.
If this is something that the public is going to be using widely in a sort of test, I think that's distinct from something that might be like being used in some legal firm, like a professional or in an academic scenario. Where you're doing other sorts of testing,
right?
And that, I think, goes along with this take that you've already mentioned, which is what are we using to train it with?
Yeah, I guess the reason I'm having such trouble with this is because, as I said, facts became the enemy. I disagreed with Reagan on just about everything, but he pointed to facts. You know, like his theories on economics, I thought were idiotic. But they were theories that I disagreed with. In Trump's case, and in many of the Republicans' cases these days, basically facts don't matter. And you see something and they tell you that you didn't see it. You know, I can't tell you number of times where I get attacked on Twitter for saying something by somebody from the right wing. And their argument against me is wrong. And that's it. It's the only thing they say, and they get more likes than I got for saying it in the first place, because Twitter is now a cesspool of right-wing thought and propaganda.
That alone tells me it's a bot or something.
It probably is. But there are so many, like, for instance, you know, the size of the crowd at the inauguration. That was the first one, or one of the first ones. You know, you can look at it. You can point to a picture and say, yeah, this is not as big a crowd as another time. And they all simply say, no, that's false. That's wrong. And how do you argue that? So if you can do that for every single fact, then you can make anybody look really good, despite the facts.
I think also something I'm just thinking about in this conversation is the ways that negative engagement was a strong theme in social media algorithms, and some of the stuff that might be used in the data that is a part of this learning algorithm and, mm-hmm. and this chat program. But in light of that, if the preponderance of behaviors from the individual are in fact, in reality, quite negative, both in how they speak and are publishing and the way they talk, their vernacular and so forth, as well as this thing we know actually is both being boosted by algorithms and activity on these networks, But also that is just psychologically a sort of it is a way of getting activity because people respond in a visceral way, or they act in a way to vent. We know that temptation, of course, innately. So if the person behaves actually in this certain way, and then people are responding, it seems to me that this is really a simple answer, that they're a victim of their own behaviors, and people are reacting, and so there's this preponderance of negativity around that individual. So it seems like it would that alone would make it much harder for something to create art that isn't in some way sarcastic, or you know, if it's being nice or a pleasant poem about someone, most of that information might actually read in like a negative way, because there's just not that much in the tons of behaviors and reactions to that behavior, a lot of positive stuff to say.
Yes. A related story, I think it's related. A Russian court has fined the Wikimedia Foundation 2 million rubles, that's about $27,000, for failing to delete alleged misinformation about the Russian military from Wikipedia. Yeah, it's the third fine Russia has issued against the Wikipedia owner since Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine a year ago. Shortly after Russia invaded Ukraine last year, Russia introduced sweeping new laws restricting what people can report about the conflict, finding or blocking websites that spread information at odds with the Kremlin's official narrative. The latest fine was imposed after the authorities accused Wikipedia of spreading misinformation in articles about Russian military units. The Wikimedia Foundation said the fines were for not complying with takedown requests for well-sourced content related to five articles about the Russian military on Russian language Wikipedia. These are part of several takedown orders and fines from Russian authorities that we have continued to receive for failing to comply with similar requests. We have not taken down any content and already have two active appeals for fines on similar topics. So you see, this is what happens when you have a government that insists that what is true is not true, and what is not true is true, and they penalize and threaten people who don't go along with it.
Yeah, this is an intimidation tactic. Don't get this. Don't be confused about this in any way.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely a way to chill media organizations that are actually reporting facts, and this should be met with stern disapproval.
Now,
among other things,
what happens when there's artificial intelligence that is basically sanctioned by the Russian government? I'm curious what kinds of statements will be made. Very interesting. Any thoughts, Alex?
Yeah, I think this is really good for the Wikimedia Foundation. I'm very proud of them, and that they stood up to this, and that they are standing behind facts and the truth, and not kowtowing and sort of complying with the lowest common denominator type of governmental intrusion and interference here. I think it's all the more reason why we should stand behind and support initiatives like the Wikimedia Foundation, because they're out there to make sure that objectivity and truth prevails over intimidation and lies.
Yeah, certainly. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm with that.
All right. Hey, we have a letter to read from one of our listeners, and you can write to us, oth@2600.com, for Off the Hook here at WBAI. Hi, everyone. I'm a longtime listener, potential future caller. I love your show. Appreciate so much the effort you put into it. It's a special part of my week to take time to listen, as I have been doing for many years since streaming became a thing. I think I even remember using Real Audio to listen years ago, and I always tune into WBAI when I'm in or going through New York City. Yeah, and we were in Real Audio way back at the very beginning, 1997, I think. A while back, when you were playing with ChatGPT, awesome use of text-to-speech, by the way, you mentioned and demonstrated another site which used Joe Biden's voice. For the life of me, I can't remember the damn URL. What was it? It's absolutely creepy. Did we have it? Did we actually have the URL? I think we played it. I don't think we had a URL where you could do that.
My recollection is this was in a news story.
Yes, it was in a news story.
It was featured, but the actual technology or the site behind it, I don't know that it was publicly accessible to the best of my knowledge.
Uh-huh. Also, a picture bird has turned out to be pretty cool once you train it a little bit. I guess that's what they call what I what I came up with, Bird Shazam. And now there's Picture Bird. Well, maybe Picture Bird existed first. I don't know. I just wanted to have something where you could identify birds by holding your phone up. Urban noises have confused it from time to time with amusing results. My guess is there is no guy screaming at people on the street entry for it to reference. That would be a good one. At some point, I should play my instrument into it, which is a double bass, since maybe it'll think it's a very big bird. Thanks also for reminding me why I have zero desire to ever go to Mississippi. That's a reference to one of the phone calls we got on overtime concerning some shenanigans that Republicans are doing in Mississippi with regards to taking control of courts and policing, all that kind of thing. Rebel notwithstanding, I look forward to the next show. David in Baltimore. David, thank you very much for that phone call. And, of course, people can write to us, OTH at 2600.com, with all kinds of thoughts. We have another letter here. Dear Emmanuel, all those in Skype land, those who may be on assignment, I hope this letter finds you well. My name is Dante, and I am a theater professional from the UK. I wanted to take a moment to say hello to you and the host in Skype land and let you know how much I enjoy your radio show, Off the Hook, on WBAI in New York. As a theater professional, I have a great appreciation for storytelling, and I find your radio show to be an excellent platform for sharing stories and discussing technology-related issues. It's fascinating to hear the different perspectives and insights from the guests you have on the show. As for ChatGPT, I must admit that I'm quite amused and intrigued by this AI language model. As someone who struggles with dyslexia, I find it helpful in translating my thoughts and ideas into coherent sentences and paragraphs. It's impressive to see how far technology has come and how it can assist individuals in so many ways. I've been listening to Off the Hook since I found out about the Hackers on Planet Earth conference back in 2007. I fell down a hacker film rabbit hole trying to watch as many good and bad depictions of what computer hacking is like through the eye of cinema. That's when I stumbled upon Freedom Downtime, which is one of the good films. From there, I found audio files of the Hope Talks and started my exploration into the world of hacking and my interest in all things technical. I have a question for you. I've always wondered when I could first hear Rebel from the audio timeline. I always hear him on the radio show and the audio recording of the social engineering talks. Also, I was wondering if there was one last year, as I could not see it on Channel 2600 on YouTube. Everything is on Channel 2600 on YouTube, so nothing is left out there. In closing, I must come clean and admit that I used ChatGPT to write this letter, but I hope that it still conveys my appreciation for your radio show and the work you do. Keep up the excellent work, and I look forward to listening to more episodes in the future. Enclosed below is my prompt script I gave the AI for you to compare. Best regards, insert name here. And okay, I'm going to read what was inputted into ChatGPT. Write a friendly letter to Emmanuel Goldstein, the host of Off the Hook, a radio show on WBAI in New York. Say hello to the host in Skype land. Talk about the amusement and concerns of ChatGPT. Say how I like the show and have been listening since I found out about the Hackers on Planet Earth conference back in 2007 when I fell down a hacker film rabbit hole trying to watch as many good and bad depictions of what computer hacking is like through the eyes of cinema, and how I stumbled upon Freedom Downtime, which was one of the good films, and from there found audio files of the Hope Talks and started my exploration into the world of hacking and my interest in all things technology. Sign it from Dante, a theater professional from the UK, ask when I could first hear Rebel from the audio timeline, as I always wondered who he was from the radio show and the audio recording of the social engineering talks. Add an aside asking if there was one last year, as I could not see it on Channel 2600 on YouTube. In a PPS, come clean about using ChatGPT to write this letter. Explain that you have found it helpful being dyslexic, as it helps translate your ramblings and broken sentence structures and spelling mistakes into something a bit more coherent to get the message across. Wow. Okay, so that's impressive. That's impressive, although I do think I would prefer a letter from an actual human, but wow, ChatGPT really does do some work on building letters.
I wonder what the word count differential is on that.
It's more.
If it was more succinct, if it was broken a little bit. Yeah, it's more verbose.
Hey, we're out of time. Please write to us, OTH at 2600.com, or join us in a moment over on YouTube. And, of course, you can get there by going to Channel 2600 on YouTube or just clicking on the link that's on the 2600.com webpage. We'll see you next week here on WBAI New York. Good night.
Enough respect and praise to the creator. Over the years, it seems that I became a landmark in the hip-hop
look at my album. Like a problem, they try to solve them. They don't know, it only leads the way to a bright, more positive day. By itself, it's not the bright day. Sit up straight and hear what I say. Fear and ignorance, I'm down for stopping this. But the bright day is your consciousness. I'm a poet, my words will heal you. I'm not a phony, I really feel you. That's why I walk and talk to my nation, wherever they are in any situation. They usually ask for an autograph, and I'll whip out the pen and just write blast. Master, KRSONEBDP, peace and unity. But do not concentrate on the paper. Concentrate on the laws of the creator. Cause when the paper's gone, it will deceive you. But Allah will never leave you. Nothing I say now is hypothetical. These are the facts, a little metaphysical. We are one, every heart, every lung. So why then was the black man hung? He was hung by the so-called Christians that went to church and did not listen. See, Jesus couldn't stand politics, so they nailed him to the crucifix. Then it was that way, today it's a trigger. So why is the Pope such a political figure? I don't know, but it's really beyond me. But through knowledge, they'll never con me. That's from Jesus Christ to right now. Every time a black man speaks up, kapow. See, people concentrate on the leader and not the message coming through the speaker. If the Christians really heard Christ, the black man never would have lived this life. My point is that do not concentrate on what I say, create, or debate. I might be great and you might admire, but what I say is to take you much higher, more higher than the physical plane, to the plane of forces and the astral plane, the mental plane and the final three. They're all around you, yet you can't see. So grab the spear of life and aim it, and you'll be guided by edutainment.